Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us today with the 25th African Union Summit in Sandton is Minister Pelanomi Venson Mutoi. Minister Mutoi is currently the Minister of Foreign Affairs with Botswana. She was previously Communications, Science and Technology Minister, Works, Transport and Communications Minister, Trade and Industry, Wildlife and Tourism Minister, Education and Skills and Development Minister, and is currently Minister of Foreign Affairs. Minister, could you please share a few of the landmarks in your career and when you understood that serving your country was a big part of your destiny?
Well, let me just start off by indicating that it has been a long, very long road. And on the political side, it started off, it has not always been on the political side. I started off being a public officer, working as an administration officer in what we call the land boards in Botswana. And these are the land administration authorities. And I ended up in the Ministry of Local Government, which was called Ministry of Local Government Lands and Housing, as permanent secretary, which is equivalent of director general in the South African government. That's the equivalent. And I spent almost 20 years on that side of government work, and before I joined politics. In politics, this is the beginning of my fourth term, which is my 16th year in politics, 14 as minister. The first 2 years in politics, I was on the backbench, which is ordinary member of parliament, because in Botswana you have to be both member of parliament before you become a minister, because our ministers are appointed from parliament. And the most, I think, important parts of my service to my country have occurred in both for me. When I served local government, and the contact that I made with people, particularly in the rural areas, the everyday life, particularly in the land board, the closeness to the rural people, the closeness to land, how closely people relate to land, not only for agriculture, but for basic survival, for housing, for growing your food, for grazing your livestock, for raising your children, for everything that people do is on land. And therefore, land acquisition, ownership of land, or access to using land does become central to everybody in the country. And learning to use land and to administer land and to deal with people's issues around land, for me, that was the greatest exposure and the greatest of knowledge in my country, but also learning just about people and dependence on land. And then I did a few bits and pieces, and then I went to school as an adult. I didn't have my degree until I was much older, because I had to look after my younger brothers and sisters, as it happens with most of us who grew up and had to go to school to support families, to support siblings. I'm the eldest of eight.
That's a big family, Minister.
My father passed on when I was young, and I had to help my mother look after the younger ones. And therefore, when I finished my high school, even though I had the opportunity and had scholarships at the time that I could have taken up to go to university, I couldn't. I had to work to help my mother raise the younger ones. And therefore, I had to let school go by and then do my university much later, when I was 35. And when I was 37, I graduated with my master's degree. For me, that was just something that had to be done, because I realized then that if you didn't have a piece of paper, it didn't matter how smart you thought you were. The world out there wanted a piece of paper to prove it. And that's why I had to struggle very, very hard to go out there and do that piece of paper. It wasn't easy, I tell you, because trying to do algebra and calculus at 37 with young kids who know these things, and I had to sit in front of a computer at that age, it was the scariest part of my life. But I had to do it.
But I think, Minister, with what you're saying, in terms from an education point of view, it gives you the skills, it gives you the ability to take on and learn new things.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, I'm Zonke Dikana, a South African Afro-soul musician, songwriter and producer. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance.
Today, we're talking to Dr. Pelonomi Vincent Mutoi, Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation for Botswana. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk.
And Minister, in your capacity now, your portfolio is foreign affairs and all of the community work that you've done, working across different countries, I'm sure that that has given you the advantage in your portfolio today. Whilst you hold this position, it puts you directly in conflict where culture, tradition and religion are concerned. Yes. And requires you to find the silver lining, I think, sometimes for the benefit of women moving forwards. What is your opinion on this?
I think the thing that fine-tuned me even further, ironically, was the Minister of Education. This is my last posting. I went into the Minister of Education without... I'm not trained in education. I'm trained as an administrator. When I did my master's degree, I chose human resources development, even though my background, the diplomas I had done were all in local government because that was where my forte was. But then I decided, look, I've done administration all my life, and it was mostly in local government, but let me pick human resources development. And let me pick it from a scientific point of view. And in that process, take systems development. And take it, because of the IT era, take management systems from a point of view of modern technologies. And that's what I did at 37. And that was the most exciting of all things. So I had to do international finance. I had to do statistics at that age. The challenge was huge. I struggled. I studied. And for the first time in my life and in my academic life, I saw an A on my results. I was always a B student and quite happy with that. But I started seeing A's because I had to do to work double time because I couldn't imagine myself failing. I knew I had to pass, but I didn't realize that I was putting in so much effort that in fact it propelled me even beyond my own dreams that I had. But education, to answer you directly, education put me in every family because every family has a child that goes to school. You see the passion of mothers, single mothers. It threw me back to my own mother, struggling with so many children, going to school without a father. It put me through poor families, seeing children through school. It put me through abused children trying to go through school. Secrets of families of children that are abused at night who then have to wake up in the morning and trying to struggle with learning in school. Of teachers who have to show compassion to uncover societal problems of children who are having difficulty studying, of brilliant children who may come out with A's through the year and suddenly drop to D for no reason that teachers could understand. But some teacher with compassion has to sit there and understand why. And this is what I was finding out at education, that there's yet a whole new world in education, more than just teaching, that was happening there.
And recently I've had conversations with Batabile Dlamini, who is part of South Africa's social development minister. Mm-hmm. And one of the key areas that she spoke about is the importance of early childhood development. Yes. Almost placing it at paramount before we get to the education level.
Those were the things that I had to fight with. When I got into the Minister of Education in Botswana, I found that primary education was in one ministry. From Standard 8 equivalent of South Africa, which is Form 1 in Botswana, was in another ministry. My immediate reaction was, we couldn't expect junior certificate and matric, which is Form 5 results, to improve for as long as these two were separate. We didn't have preschool as compulsory. It was left to the hands of NGOs and private operators. I have fought, and I can say today that I forced the introduction of preschool in all public schools. It's not yet running the way it ought to be running, but I have said every single primary school should have preschool. Even if it means running a 6-week induction program, do that. So that we don't have buildings for it, nor do we have equipment for it. But at least have those children go through an induction, because it is critical that children have preliminaries before they have grade one. We have a pilot now that has introduced at least in 150 of the schools in Botswana now have a 12-month proper preschool program. Because without preschool, you are not preparing the students sufficiently to get ready for school. It is going to happen now in Botswana. If primary education isn't done, if primary school teachers are unhappy, results will never improve. So my hope is that the education system in Botswana should turn around in the next 5-6 years.
And Minister, is that also part of the Millennium Development Goals in terms of Botswana's objectives? How is it progressing?
Well, we have a new and vibrant minister in Botswana, a former judge, and she's coming in with so much energy. She's younger, and my hope, and I really am very impressed with the way she's taking on the program. It looks like she's going to push this thing even harder. And my prayers on a daily basis are that she's going to get this thing right. And it's looking promising, because with the primary teachers on the upswing as it looks, we can only hope for better results in Botswana.
Education is fundamental, and I know that UNESCO has done numerous reports where they talk about additional years of schooling, the benefit particularly for women to not only enrich her own lives, but what she does for her family, on their well-being, and in turn, their education. Yes. Minister, turning towards another aspect of the summit, you are here in your capacity as Foreign Affairs. Has the conference fulfilled your expectations so far?
The conference, from the point of view of on the gender side, my satisfaction comes from the fact that after hearing the presentations from other countries, I'm happy that Africa seems to be making progress. In fact, compared to the rest of the world, I have great hope that African women are going to come out a lot better in terms of fighting for their rights. In many ways, I think, more than other parts of the world. This is my hope. This is how it looks from where we sit, at least after the meeting yesterday. Because African women are very vocal. African women, if you look at African markets as just an example, the African woman, you go to the markets anywhere on the continent, they run the economy. There's no question about that. The African woman in poverty-stricken villages, she's running the household. They keep the family together. There's no question about that. So wherever there is life, even in the poorest of families, any ticking of life at all, if there's any, is because there is a woman there. This says to me that the hope that there is on the continent is in the hands of those women. And all we need to do is to provide hope, to provide resources as governments, to provide legislation that gives them strength and gives them protection, and also then provide those resources and make them accessible so that the women that keep homes running and fires burning can at least have access. And I'm not saying handouts. I'm just saying that when people try, we should make it possible for them to get to the next level.
So we need more enabling elements, whether that's through policy to help with the implementation.
We really have to make it possible for those that work hard to get to the next level that they deserve to get to.
Minister, talking about women working within the continent in this space, in South Africa, women constitute approximately 44% of the South African workforce, but 80% of our female labor force occupies low-skilled, underpaying positions. How does this compare in Botswana, for example?
In Botswana, there is an interesting contrast. While South Africa may show higher numbers in the political arena, Botswana isn't doing so well in the politics. For instance, there are only 5 ministers in cabinet. But if you go to the level of ambassadors, half the number of ambassadors in Botswana, 50%, are women. More than half of our directors general are women. The directors below those are mostly women. The judges are women. I mean, half of them are women. The governor of the bank is a woman. The attorney general is a woman. The auditor general is a woman. The director of corruption and economic crime is a woman. All the key, those are the positions that I have mentioned. Those are women. So, all the administrative positions, the women are coming up.
And it sounds like women are then straight throughout the hierarchy. Yes. And given your proof and your evidence of your career, you started, yes, within that capacity and migrated to the political space. Yes.
We have not taken a quota in Botswana, deliberately.
Please can you elaborate on that? Because I know that from a South African point of view, we have tried to take through on a quota.
We haven't, because we thought, you know, if we say 30%, the minute we hit 30%, we're going to be told that's enough, that's your quota. This is how we can get to 50% and nobody is stopping us. That way we can even get to 60% and nobody will know that's where we are. We'll probably get to 70% and they will think maybe that's too many, but by that time it will be too late. But we don't have a quota in Botswana. And this is why we're not even talking about a quota.
So, for instance, in South Africa, and I know in Malawi, there are gender equality bills. And the South African bill is still waiting to go through its various renditions. Do you have any similar types of policies in place?
We have not ratified the gender protocol precisely because it was asking for the quota. It was also asking for certain guarantees that we knew we couldn't keep up to, and also certain guarantees that we thought would tie women to particular positions that may not necessarily be rewarding for women. And this is why we thought, for as long as women are not stopped from getting into positions where they qualify, and of course we look bad because we haven't ratified.
But it sounds like, based on what you're saying, from a Botswana point of view, that it is a very progressive government and it is pro-women.
From if you look at it on the ground, we're not complaining. But from those that are looking at Botswana, from having not signed, we look like the bad neighbors who are not signing the protocol because we haven't signed. But you see, whether we sign it or not, we look bad because we are not doing what everybody is doing. But the thing is, it doesn't really help us, or we don't really lose anything by not signing. So we could sign it just to keep up. So that is the reason why we haven't signed, purely because, and this is how we operate really. We usually look at what the protocol does locally, whether it changes the value of life for our citizens, whether it violates any rights effectively, and whether by not signing it we are cutting anybody down violating any of our own laws. And if we are not, quite frankly, and if we are signing it only to keep up with the Joneses, frankly, sometimes we don't do things because we want to be in fashion.
Well, there's a tremendous amount of legislation, and I think the most important thing with any legislation is implementation. But if there is an abundance of legislation which is not going to do anything, then there's no point.
And if we are going to sign it and then fail to honor an obligation, which is like once you've signed, you have to send 10 people to some country every year to show a face, and it doesn't do anything at home, we don't sign things for that kind of reason, because then the effect of signing is only cosmetic. So those are some of the reasons.
We'll take a short break.
Hi, this is Lyra, South African Afro-soul singer and songwriter. You're listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amelia Malka on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy.
Today, we're talking to Dr. Pelonomi Vincent Mutoi, Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation for Botswana. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Minister, turning towards a more personal perspective, you hold one of the highest positions in your country, and you have had an illustrious career going through with 16 years within the government space. You, in the process, have become a role model, providing evidence to many women and girls, not only in Botswana, but also across the continent with your different workings, that hard work and personal sacrifice is one of the key elements, and through that, anything can be achieved. Can you share with us some of the gender challenges that you've experienced and overcome during your career?
I'll tell you what, I turn a blind eye sometimes to challenges that are gender-based. Because were I to see them as clearly as sometimes they sometimes manifest, I would spend far too much time. They are too engaging sometimes, and I know they would waste a lot of my time. I have seen them, and every time I've seen them, being human, you end up, you can't help but sometimes get the emotional side getting engaged. And that is one thing in my work life that I have trained to stay at home, the emotion. That, as far as I'm concerned, I've told myself, you know, emotion, stay home, because that's for my children and for my family. I have told my emotion, you don't come to work with me. You stay at home. I try very hard.
It's a challenging thing to do, though.
It is. It's big. It's very difficult. It's very strong. But if you don't do that, you could get destroyed, because you can imagine the level of disappointment you get at work, the level of betrayals you get at work. It's not that you don't get competition at work. There is competition from your mates. Boys don't play nicely. They don't. Boys don't like being outwitted by a girl. No, they hate it, and they play rough, and when they hit back, they don't care whether you're a girl or not. So you need to learn. Luckily for me, when I grew up around boys, so I know how to play boy games too. So I know when to be a tomboy, I know when to play boy games. But you know, it puts a strain on you to be guarded all the time, to have your antenna up all the time. Because when you are female, occasionally the antenna does come down, because you the mommy factor comes in, and you want to mother everybody, and that's when they hit you. They know.
So they look for the soft spot.
They do. And I have been hit a couple of times, and I tried to run for party chairman once, and boy, they hit me bad. And when they do that, they will use women as well. And that's usually the most painful thing, to be deceived by other women. And then you have to realize that you can't exactly get angry at other women for being used by men. So these are very challenging moments. They are. And you need to learn and to accept that these things do happen. And the one thing that I think us women have to learn also is that men will try anything. They'll even try sex if it comes to a push. And if we don't learn that early enough in life, or they'll take you throughout your life if you don't wisen to that early enough in your life, that this is one of their tools that they try to use. And luckily, because I grew up with boys, they told me, I mean, if they like you and you grow up around them, they teach you. They teach you their tricks. So the ones that I grew up with, they let me know that, hey, look, you know, this is one of our... So I knew all along from an early age that this is sometimes fun, sometimes it's a trick, sometimes it's a blow, yes, sometimes we do care. So I knew from a very early age, it's not always I love you. Sometimes it's... Practically, you are being schooled.
I'm using you. Minister, taking into account your experiences, what would you advise young women who want to follow a political career?
I would say, this is difficult. I didn't get into politics until I was much older. And this is what I tell my children. I wouldn't advise them to get into politics when they are young. I would say, get your life first. Get your job first. Find out who you are first. Basically, get your life first. Find out who you are. Get your life. Get your money first. And I don't mean that I'm rich. I'm not a rich person. I'm just a content person. I'm happy with my end of the month pay.
Would you say it's about being financially independent?
Yes. Be financially independent. Be comfortable with the little life that you have or the big life that you have. Whatever life you have, be comfortable with that first. Be comfortable with who you are and the life you have. Then you can go out there and claim to represent others. Also realize that you're giving up a big part of yourself to realize that you're fighting for a bigger cause. It's not about what you want. It's about life out there that affects so many other lives. And sometimes it's seeing the bigger picture, not just the smaller picture about your own choices. It's about being able to give and take and being able to realize that sometimes you could be wrong and be willing to listen. Listening is a big part of it. You have to be able to listen. And sometimes listening to people you don't like, because sometimes the wisdom, the answer you seek, comes from that single person that you hate totally. But you have to listen to all of them, because sometimes the answer will come from the one source you didn't expect.
Well, I think you've given us a great insight into the public life and what it takes as an individual. Minister, one of the questions that I ask all my guests on this program who, like yourself, have made tremendous achievements in their respective fields is what they consider to be some of the key factors in their success. Some people talk about hard work. Others talk about perseverance. Some talk about the influence of their mothers. What would you say have been the most pivotal factors that have helped you achieve your success?
I'd say all three for me. I persevered because my mother was there. I bet you maybe if she wasn't there, I wouldn't have stuck it out. I'd probably have just told them to take their job and stick it. Hard work, I just enjoy working, and I enjoy a challenge at work. And I enjoy seeing things happen. And I like to take a situation and turn it around. For me, it's a thing that I like doing. But my mother was an amazing person. She didn't have much education. She only did standard 3 and stopped school because she had an eye problem. And during those days, young children didn't get taken to an eye doctor because they were not supposed to wear glasses. But when I had problems at work and I struggled and I was fighting with my bosses, she always told me that they don't own the offices. The offices are public offices. They too will be gone one day. You should go back there and go to work. And she was a big one at prayer. And she taught me how to pray. She taught me how to forgive. She taught me how to believe in the bigger power and how my life isn't to be decided by other people and how my life is going to be decided by me and my own strength and my ability to persevere. And if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have done it.
Well, I think Mom's given incredible push, and as we hear with the conference today, we really demonstrates the importance of women.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after this.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Chakachaka, and I'm UNICEF and Rollback Malaria Goodwill Ambassador. You are listening to Womanity, Women in Unity, a program that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in the struggle for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, and democracy. A program against social ills such as racism, socio-economic class division, and gender-based violence. Womanity, Women in Unity, presented by Dr. Amalia Malka every week on this day at this time.
Today, we're talking to Dr. Pelonomi Vincent Motoy, Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation for Botswana. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Minister, increasingly we live in a globally connected society, and given your role as Minister of Foreign Affairs, can you expand on some of the more significant collaborations, projects that you are undertaking and working on in the continent?
I've only been in the office 8 months, and I must say one of the first ones has been, for me, peace in SADC, peace in the region. Because when I came in, there were elections all around. And therefore, I was caught up in peace missions for Mozambique and Lesotho immediately. And that, for me, was important. And, of course, peacekeeping missions in the Great Lakes region, which is still ongoing. And to some extent, South Sudan, because that is a country that... where we had collaborations with the Minister of Education where I was before, and we also had some work far afield, but that was more Ebola in Liberia. Yeah. So peacekeeping, the importance there for us is that if we have peace in the region, it transcends all the borders, of course, because any disturbance in any of our neighbors affects all of us, because it rolls over into all the other countries. And this is why it's important that when one country has any disturbance of any kind, we mobilize and make sure that we collaborate. And then apart from that, it's the general development of the region. The xenophobia issue didn't escape all of us. It was an eye-popper for all of us. And we were all concerned, and we are all concerned, that all our countries, not only in the region, but the whole continent, it's important that African states' economies stabilize, peace returns in most of the countries, education improves, and countries begin to establish... We fight poverty so that our citizens can find employment at home. And it's not just in the southern region. The boats that are crossing into Europe on a daily basis, this is an African problem that bothers us, all of us. It's an African nightmare that so many African children cross the Gibraltar literally on a daily basis, and so many lives are lost in the Mediterranean for reasons that we can no longer explain. And that should bother all of us. And solutions do have to be found. And whilst we are fighting with all of that, there are the terrorists. I mean, Boko Haram is no longer a joke. So I come into the ministry at a time when problems are no longer just helping each other out with floods or drought. It's a situation where the issues are broader, but no country can sit back and say, it's not my problem. It is our problem throughout the continent. And I can say that we are sharing information and help is sought throughout, whether it's ideas or resources. Help is sought and is being received wherever it can be delivered.
Thank you, Minister. And Minister, we're now going into the last part of our conversation today to close the discussion. Can you please use this platform to send a message of hope to all those women in Africa that due to circumstances, gender equality might not be the first item that is on her agenda, but rather the daily struggle of taking care of her family, raising her children, and putting food on the table is a more pressurizing reality?
I would say that women, that woman should not give up. I'm a daughter of a woman who had no education, a woman who had nothing at all. And all she did was she wanted to raise her children and send them to school. And she struggled, and she started to brew homemade ginger beer. And we would come back from school and carry these bottles to the village mall and sell these bottles of ginger beer every day. And through the sale of this ginger beer, this woman raised her 8 children. I am the eldest. Today, all of us are working. The last born, my youngest brother, is in Ban Ki-moon's office as an IT consultant, a graduate of IT. All my siblings are qualified people, self-employed, from the sales of that homemade ginger beer. So those women should not give up. It doesn't take witchcraft or rock science to make a minister or to create an assistant for Ban Ki-moon. Determination, trust in God and hope.
Minister, thank you for those wonderful words. They are so inspiring,
thank you.
We really appreciate you joining us here today. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity, and we have been speaking to Dr. Pelonomi Venson-Motoy, Minister of Foreign Affairs and International Cooperation for Botswana. Tune into the show next week as we continue our series of discussions from the 25th African Union Summit when we talk to Professor Nkandu Lau, Minister of Gender and Child Development for Zambia.